Jeremiah also indicated these three kinds of needs in Lamentations, saying, "Remember my poverty, the wormwood and the gall." Lamentations 3:19. The poverty relates to the intellect, because to the intellect belong the riches of the wisdom of the Son of God, in whom, as St. Paul says, are the hidden treasures of God. Colossians 2:3. The wormwood, a most bitter herb, refers to the will, because to this faculty belongs the sweetness of the possession of God. When this possession is lacking, the will is left in bitterness, and that bitterness pertains to the will is understood spiritually in the Apocalypse, where the angel told St. John that eating the book would bring bitterness to the belly. Apocalypse 10:9, meaning to the will. The gall refers not only to the memory, but to all a person's faculties and strengths. Gall signifies the death of the soul, as Moses indicates, speaking of the condemned in Deuteronomy. Their wine will be of the gall of dragons and the incurable poison of asps. Deuteronomy 32:33. Gall refers to their lack of God, which is death to the soul. These three needs and sufferings are based on the three theological virtues, faith, charity, and hope, which reside in the three faculties of the soul in the order given here: intellect, will, and memory. It should be pointed out that in this verse the soul does no more than disclose her need and suffering to the beloved. The discreet lover does not care to ask for what she lacks and desires, but only indicates this need that the beloved may do what he pleases. When the Blessed Virgin spoke to her beloved son at the wedding feast in Cana in Galilee, she did not ask directly for the wine, but merely remarked, "They have no wine." John 2:3. And the sisters of Lazarus did not send to ask our Lord to cure their brother, but to tell him that Lazarus, whom he had loved, was sick. There are three reasons for this. First, the Lord knows what is suitable for us better than we do. Second, the beloved has more compassion when he beholds the needs and resignation of a soul that loves him. Third, the soul is better safeguarded against self-love and possessiveness by indicating its lack, rather than asking for what, in its opinion, is wanting. The soul now does likewise by just indicating here three needs. Her words are similar to saying, "Tell my beloved, since I sicken and he alone is my health, to give me health, and since I suffer and he alone is my joy, to give me joy, and since I die, he alone is my life, to give me life." Stanza 3. Seeking my love, I will head for the mountains and for water sides. I will not gather flowers, nor fear wild beasts. I will go beyond strong men and frontiers. Commentary. The soul is aware that neither her sighs and prayers nor the help of good intermediaries, about which she spoke in stanzas 1 and 2, are sufficient for her to find her beloved. since the desire in which she seeks him is authentic and her love intense, she does not want to leave any possible means untried. The soul that truly loves God is not slothful in doing all she can to find the Son of God, her beloved. Even after she has done everything, she is dissatisfied and thinks she has done nothing. And accordingly, she seeks him in this third stanza. She desires to look for him herself through works. She describes the method to be employed in order to find him. She must practice the virtues and engage in the spiritual exercises of both the active and the contemplative life. As a result, she must tolerate no delights or comforts, and the powers and the snares of her three enemies, the world, the flesh, and the devil, must neither detain nor impede her. She says, seeking my love, that is, seeking my beloved. She points out here that for the attainment of God, it is not enough to pray with the heart and the tongue and receive favors from others, but that together with this, a soul must, through its own efforts, do everything possible. God usually esteems the work done by the individual himself more than many others done for him. And mindful of the words of the Beloved, seek and you shall find. Luke 11:9. The soul decides to go out searching for him in the way we mentioned, to seek him through works, that she may not be left without finding him. Many desire that God cost them no more than words, and even these they say badly. They scarcely desire to do anything for him that might cost them something. Some would not even rise from a place of their liking if they were not to receive thereby some delight from God in their mouth and heart. They will not even take one step to mortify themselves and lose some of their satisfactions, their comforts, and useless desires. Yet, unless they go and search for God, they will not find him, no matter how much they cry for him. The bride of the Canticle cried after him, but did not find him until she went out looking for him. She affirms, "In my bed by night, I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him and did not find him. I will rise up and go about the city. In the suburbs and the squares, I will look for him whom my soul loves." Canticle 3:1-2. And she says that she found him after undergoing some trials. He who seeks God and yet wants his own satisfaction and rest seeks him at night and thus will not find him. He who looks for him through the practice and works of the virtues and gets up from the bed of his own satisfaction and delight seeks him by day and thus will find him. What is not found at night appears during the day. The bridegroom himself points this out in the Book of Wisdom. Wisdom is bright and never fades, and is easily seen by them that love her, and found by them that seek her. She goes out before them that covet her, that she might first show herself to them. He who awakes early in the morning to seek her shall not labor, because he will find her seated at the door of his house. Wisdom 6:13-15. This passage indicates that when the soul has departed from the house of her own will and the bed of her own satisfaction, she will find outside divine wisdom, the Son of God, her spouse. As a result, she says here, seeking my love, I will head for the mountains and for water sides. The mountains, which are high, refer to the virtues. First, because of their height. Second, because of the difficulty and labor one undergoes in climbing them. She says she will exercise the contemplative life by means of these virtues. The water sides, which are low, apply to the mortifications, penances, and spiritual exercises by which she says she will practice the active and contemplative life together. To seek God in the right way and acquire the virtues, both are necessary. These words, then, are like saying, seeking my beloved, I will practice the high virtues and humble myself by lowly mortifications and humble exercises. She recites this line because the way to look for God is to do good works for him and mortify evil within oneself in the following manner. I will not gather flowers. Since seeking God demands a heart naked, strong, and free from all evils and goods which are not purely God, the soul speaks in this and the following verses of the freedom and fortitude one should possess in looking for God. She declares she will not gather the flowers she sees along the way. The flowers are all the gratifications, satisfaction, and delights which may be offered to her in this life, and which will hinder her should she desire to gather and accept them. They are of three kinds: temporal, sensory, and spiritual. All three occupy the heart and hinder the spiritual nakedness required for the narrow way of Christ. If the soul pays attention to them or becomes attached, consequently, she says that in order to seek him, she will not gather these things. This line is equivalent to saying, I will not set my heart on the riches and the goods the world offers. Neither will I tolerate the pleasures and the delights of my flesh, nor will I pay heed to the satisfactions and the consolations of my spirit in a way that may detain me from seeking my love in the mountains of virtues and trials. She makes this declaration in order to take the advice the prophet David gives those who journey along the path. If riches abound, do not set your heart on them. Psalm 61. These riches refer to both sensory and temporal goods and to the spiritual consolations. It should be known that not only temporal goods and bodily delights are contradictory to the path leading to God, but also spiritual consolations, if possessed or sought with attachment, are an obstacle to the way of the cross of Christ the Bridegroom. He who is to advance must not gather these flowers. More than this, he must also have the courage and the fortitude to say, nor fear wild beasts. I will go beyond strong men and frontiers. In these verses, she records the soul's three enemies: the world, the devil, and the flesh. They are causes of war and hardship along the road. The wild beasts refer to the world, the strong men to the devil, and the frontiers to the flesh. She calls the world wild beasts because, in the imagination of the soul that begins to tread the path leading to God, the world is pictured as wild animals, threatening and scaring her. The world frightens her in three ways. First, it makes her think she must live without its favor and lose her friends, reputation, importance, and even wealth. Second, through another beast, no less ferocious, it makes her wonder how she will ever endure the permanent lack of the contentments and the delights of the world and all its comforts. The third is still worse. It makes her think that tongues will rise up against her and mock her, that there will be many remarks and jeers, and that she will be considered almost worthless. These fears are brought before some souls in such a way that not only does perseverance against these wild animals becomes most difficult, but it even becomes difficult to determine to embark on this road. Yet some generous souls will be faced with other wild beasts, more interior and spiritual, hardships and temptations and many kinds of trials through which they must pass. God sends these to those he wants to raise to high perfection by trying them like gold in the fire. According to David, many are the tribulations of the just, but out of these the Lord will deliver them. Psalm 33. Yet the truly loving soul, esteeming her beloved above all things, trusting in his love and friendship, does not find it hard to say, "Nor fear the wild beasts, and I will go beyond strong men and frontiers." She calls devils the second enemy, strong men, because they strive mightily to entrap her on the road, and because, too, their temptations are stronger and their wiles more baffling than those of the world and the flesh. Finally, because the devils reinforce themselves with these other two enemies, the world and the flesh, in order to wage a rugged war. David, in alluding to them, calls them strong men. The strong men sought after my soul, in Psalm 53. The prophet Job also remarked concerning this strength that there is no power on earth comparable to that of the devil, who was made to fear no one. Job 41:24. That is, no human strength is comparable to his. Only the divine power is sufficient to conquer him, and only the divine light can understand his wiles. A man who must overcome the devil's strength will be unable to do so without prayer, nor will he be able to understand his deceits without mortification and humility. Saint Paul counsels the faithful, "Put on the armor of God, that you may be able to resist the wiles of the devil, for this struggle is not against flesh and blood." Ephesians 6:11-12. By blood, he means the word, and by the armor of God, prayer, and the cross of Christ, in which is found the humility and the mortification that we mentioned. The soul also affirms that she will pass by frontiers, which refer to the natural rebellions of the flesh against the spirit. As St. Paul says in Galatians 5:17, is like saying the flesh covets against the spirit and sets itself up as though on the frontier to oppose the spiritual journey. A person must pass these frontiers by breaking through these difficulties and throwing down with willful strength and determination all sensory appetites and natural affections. In the measure that these are present in the soul, the spirit is impeded by them and cannot go on to true life and spiritual delight. Saint Paul indicated this clearly. If by the Spirit you mortify the inclinations and appetites of the flesh, you shall live. Romans 8:13. Such is the method the soul in this stanza claims she must follow in order to seek her beloved on this road. The method, in sum, consists of steadfastness and courage in not stooping to gather flowers, of bravery in not fearing the wild beasts, and of strength in passing by strong men and frontiers, and of the sole intention to head for the mountains and the watersides of virtues, as we explained.